Ignite your jetpacks and battle an ancient alien-controlled menace with us this week as we look at a Korean film in English, an unfinished film released in theaters, and a whole lot of Duke Nukem-inspired 90s action movie phrases. This is Kaiju vs. History, Yongari.
Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your evil archaeologist ready to bury the bodies and move on, Patrick. Joining me is a sad old Matt Damon. That's a conspiracy theorist, Miles. Hey, Miles. How are you doing?
What's up, buddy?
there's some high highs at the end of this season, end of the 90s decade.
We start off so strong and then kind of end with a whimper.
Last week we had Gamera 3. That was great. And this year,
yeah, that was great.
We go from Japan to Korea.
We're not ending with Gamera 3. If we were, I'd probably be pretty excited, but you know, we've got some mixed bags rounding out the decade. I'm not gonna lie, whenever someone is trying to pronounce the creature's name, I just kept hearing Young Gary, and I'm like, yeah, it's Young Gary. Get him, Gary. Yeah, we're talking about a 1999 South Korean kaiju film in English.
South Korean in English. Yes, it's very confusing until you see the movie and you're like, oh yeah, that kind of makes sense.
It certainly reminds me of all the other like wannabe kaiju movies, and I'm not talking about like, you know, your Tremors or your Relic or something like that, but more like your Kraw and your Zarkors. Like, this is more in that vein.
Those are just bad. These feel like a good movie that was put through Google Translate, like back into another language and then back again. You know,
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, even some of the beats, I'm like, some of them are the skeletons of a kaiju film here. Absolutely. That means nothing.
Yeah, I mean, this is on paper very much a South Korean kaiju film, you know, loosely based on the 1967 Korean monster of the same name, that the Korean monster claim to fame, Yongari. This one spelled with two G's in Western kind of audiences. This is a 1999 movie by that same name, directed by Shim Young Rae. And indeed, it finished filming in, I think, 1998 or so. And then they had like a whole year, you know, with some SFX work and CGI that they added in. And they did technically release this movie in 1999, Korea, July 17th, 1999. But it wasn't finished at that point. So they went back and added more CGI and like finished the CGI. From what I've read, there's some reports that when it came out, it was very unfinished. And the version you and I saw, that is the finished version. At first, when I first watched
the 2001 upgraded version?
Yes. When I first saw this, I was like, oh, that must be the uncompleted version. Because, you know, textures aren't like, they don't look like they're completely composited. Young Gary's kind of a smooth boy in some scenes.
Yeah, but we'll definitely get to the
upgraded version. It did release in the US, I think, in 2001, maybe directly to. I don't have this in my notes.
It's
up
wild,
front, but
like what blows my mind is this movie has a poster that was used at the Cannes Film Festival in 1998. Like, this movie was present at the Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, and yeah, you're getting ahead of us.
I know, but they're trying to sell it there. I having issues. Before we get into whatever this movie is, Patrick, tell us what's in the title.
Well, like I said, Yongari's based on the 1967 Korean monster of the same name. There's a lot less dancing and fun with this Yongari. It was called Yongari 2001 when they re-released it a couple years later. In Japan, it's Kaiju Daikessen Yongari, and that is Great Monster Battle Yongari. This movie you will see a lot of places, including IMDb for the US version, listed as either Reptile 2001 or Reptilian. I've seen in a lot of places.
I feel like I saw Reptilian at the Hollywood Video back in the day.
Yes. So that's what the I think VHS or DVD release was. It's so funny. It bounces back and forth. I'm not sure what it's called on Letterboxd now that I think about it. But
I feel like on Tubi it was Reptilian.
More than likely when you find it here in the States, it will be called Reptilian. Yongari the Reptile in Portugal. China's title translated out to Resurrection of Godzilla. That's very wrong. Hungarian title was Yongari the Space Monster, which kind of, yeah, that's pretty true. Yeah. Supposedly, this was the most expensive South Korean film production of all time until it was topped, I think, 7 years later by the
same director, right?
Kaiju effects heavy film D-War, which of course we're going to look at. But yeah, it's so funny at the time that this topped the charts. And like I said, you think it would be all the CGI, but yeah, it was just a very expensive production all over.
Yeah, it's wild to me. I think part of it is not so much that there's clearly some lost in translation stuff. Like you said, it feels like a copy of a copy of a copy of a translation in terms of the script. And that's absolutely true.
Well, what actually happened was the director did not speak English. So he had to translate his directions to someone else to translate, you know.
This is one of those movies that I think it's interesting having sat with it, because we had a lot going on in IRL. And so we watched this movie like a month ago.
Yeah.
And so thinking back and actually trying to remember some of it, because I was not going to watch this movie again, there are parts that I'm like, oh, this is funny. But again, it's for me, some of these so bad it's good movies come with, this is fun in the right environment. Like if I was sitting with you and we were sharing drinks, I would be having a good time.
Yeah, I think we should watch this next time we're together. It's so raucously good, bad.
I think both of our significant others would probably hate us, because it's not really good enough to be funny. Like, I mean, we have
I disagree.
No. There are humorous parts of this movie, and largely unintentional, despite the fact that the director's origins are in comedy. This movie, I think, also is deeply hampered. And look, you will find, of the two of us, I'm a pretty big apologist for CGI. And typically, I take the opinion that it doesn't matter so long as the movie delivers. You know, stuff ages badly. Like when we saw in The Relic, the fire stuff is real bad in that. But it's fine. It's what they had at the time. I'm not going to, you know, curse it. Because of the unfinished state of this movie, and because of, I don't know whether it was the lack of money or the lack of know-how in their CGI, I think the monster looks pretty terrible, especially when you take into consideration, you know, you have this weird, like, a lot of CGI you see, you know, it looks cheap, but it's whatever. This actually looks like video game graphics of the time. And
yeah, and this is the upgraded version, you know. That's the thing. They went back and finished the movie off.
What infuriates me is they actually had molds done for suits.
And they're pretty good-looking suits.
Good-looking suits!
And there technically is some suitmation footage in this film. Some reaction shots, and they shot, you know, on this giant kind of miniature set. It's not much, though. Like, you'll have to really kind of crane your neck to figure it out. And it's mostly reaction kind of shots of, you know, some things. You know, their vision, the director, Shim Hyung-rae's vision, was to have a Korean film that would kind of rival TriStar's Godzilla. You know, this is obviously kind of in that same vein of a movie. So it's a CGI creature, and they were moving away from guys in giant rubber suits, you know, for better or for worse.
No, for worse. Especially for worse. And
technically, they had two rubber suits for this movie, because there is also, one of the other titles was Yongari versus Psyker. Psyker is the other kaiju in this film that I always forget is in this movie, because he only shows up in like the third act. But there's two kaiju in this movie.
That and this movie takes so many jumps, and like every single time, like, okay, this must be the main character. Nope, we are shifting gears. Okay, this must be the main character. Nope, we're shifting gears again. Okay, and like the entire movie has like four different main characters, and I think only one of them kind of sticks around to be the main character.
Yeah, you think it's going to be our friendly neighborhood reporter,
journalist. Yeah,
the journalist is going to be your main character, and he doesn't go on the adventure, the kind of like infiltration adventure with the main female archaeologist, I believe, played by Holly Davis, and the conspiracy theorist played by the guy that played old Matt Damon in Saving Private
Ryan. Right.
Which is, every time I see his face, I'm like, man, all those guys died for you, you jerk. Just because all your brothers died. I don't think that's fair. And then there's, well, oh, there's also like some military characters that show up about halfway through the movie.
Yeah, and one of them kind of feels like a main character, and no. Like,
there are a lot of English, primary English speaking actors that they brought over or they hired locally, and they just really shoehorned them into this film, you know, make it felt like perhaps a Hollywood production. Doesn't really work out that way. But I was actually honestly surprised at the lack of, you know, Korean characters in this movie. It's like they were actively trying to avoid it, using it, Korean folk.
It almost feels like an asylum movie. Like, cause I mean, it planned to be released the same time as TriStar's Godzilla almost. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's just, so there's that energy. And I don't think that was the intention for this movie. Mm-hmm. I will say that. I don't think anyone went into this intending to make the film. I mean, you look at the theatrical poster, the poster is actually pretty sick.
Yeah, well, and definitely the one that they took to Cannes to, you know, pre-sell this movie. Like, if I saw those posters and you're thinking, it's like, well, maybe we can capitalize on this new Godzilla movie that's coming out next year. Maybe there will be a resurgence of interest and energy behind this genre. You know, wouldn't you want to be the producer that brings, you know, Korea's Godzilla to to right. your studio? I mean,
like on paper, those kind of ideas sound great, and that's usually how the biggest disasters get started. is on paper, this was a great idea. And I mean, I also love the fact that, like, you know, Yongari is a bipedal monster. The design itself isn't too leaning on looking like Godzilla, but there are certainly some vibes.
It honestly looks a little bit more like Pulgasari or the
mixed with maybe a little space monster. Godzilla.
Yeah, maybe
a little blocky. Like, I mean, they make him look like a lot more armored and blocky, and mm-hmm. like he does look like some sort of ancient being, and they do, in terms of design, they do kind of capture that. I think one of the problems is that Yongari doesn't really, and partially because the big twist, or one of the twists, is that, oh, he's actually being controlled by aliens. Yongari is, you know, his own thing. And because of that, Yongari doesn't really seem to be a character in this movie. He is dressing, and he is, you know,
he's
something
a destructive force, you know, and
yeah, but like, I mean, he's just there. He is insert monster here. And I think that's unfortunate because, I mean, not that that would have made this movie any better, but I think it would have, at least you could sell the idea that this is such an honest attempt to create South Korea's Gojira. And as opposed to being kind of a series of really silly tropes strung together.
I mean, if they wanted to make a honest to goodness kaiju character movie, I mean, they went about it the exact same way that TriStar's Godzilla did, which was like focus on all these disparate human characters having plots kind of related to the monster, and don't really give at all the focus that they need to for the monster.
Yeah, I think there's this idea that's really kind of come up in the last like 35 years that like the human story has to, you know, be the focus. And while certainly a human story Hannon should be taught. I mean, you know, this year's or last year's Godzilla Minus One certainly delivers that.
Yeah, but that's the exception. I think that proves a rule for a lot of kaiju movies, though. That movie is just great.
Yes,
and it also exactly. has a kaiju. Whereas if I go to a kaiju film and they don't make the monster a character, they have to have everything else like great.
Exactly.
You know,
and often like not. people will complain mostly because a lot of people now are looking for reasons to complain so they can, you know, do well online. But like a lot of the things that some people said about, you know, some of the more modern Godzilla stories are like, oh, well, the human story is so silly. I'm like, well, that's, you know, any great Showa era movie, this human story is usually silly. And so long as it's good, silly, and the monster stuff is top tier, that's fine. Which is, I think, is the case for a lot of the modern Godzilla films.
Yeah, it's so funny. The only exception to that is, I feel like Invasion of the Astro Monster, you know, one of the Showa era kaiju films that has the least amount of monster
right, screen time. Right, because that was all human.
But you have this other very cool kind of James Bond-esque yeah. space adventure on top of that.
Yeah, there's a reason together. It's one of my favorite. I think when we watched it, we were both kind of surprised how little kaiju there was, because I remember watching this movie all the time as a kid. Mm-hmm. And because it's such a great, like, fun 60s sci-fi movie
yeah.
that you forget that the monsters aren't there very often.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, their presence is felt. And this movie, I guess young Gary's presence is felt for a lot of the film, even though I don't think he gets resurrected from these ancient bones that they're excavating, like, until
it's like 70 minutes into the movie, it feels like.
I think it's probably closer to like 30 or 40 or so, but it's too long, especially as there's, like I said, all these other human plot threads, including one that ultimately has no bearing whatsoever, which is the lead archaeologist, many attempts to bury the bodies of all these workers that keep dying and
yeah.
continue the dig, because his character just dies, right? Doesn't he just get crushed by
young Gary? I feel like half of those characters get wiped out. And I was like, where is this movie going? Because I thought we were following all these people, but nope.
Yeah. I so want some of his lines, including, like, you know, I created you, or whatever he says, the Dr. Frankenstein line before he gets smushed. I want that to be a gif that I can send you. But unfortunately, I've had to plea find
it. And I think that's another problem, is like, this movie is like Z grade level of like cartoon writing. Like, there is no subtlety to the kind of mad scientist archaeologist. Like, he's flat out evil, but cartoonishly evil. Like, he is flippantly like, yeah, we're going to kill these guys, or it doesn't matter if these diggers get murdered, we're going to cover that up. And I mean, he is just cartoonishly bad. And I feel like that might have been a language barrier situation. Like, if he was able to work with South Korean actors and maybe communicate, or maybe it was a script. I don't know. There's so many things that, like, I don't know enough, even though there's like a 2-hour documentary on this.
I was about to say, Miles, all you got to do is watch the 2-hour
documentary. No, I'm not.
And all the secrets of young Gary.
Not even for this show.
I watched as much of it as I could. And it's very interesting getting, you know, the story straight from the American actors, and like what the set conditions were like, how they were brought on to the project and brought over to Korea, and the director's attempts to kind of, you know, take over the set and keep some order. It is a death knell of a film, though, that they describe the shooting conditions as they were shooting the film in sequential order, which is like one of the biggest no-nos for filming. And also, they didn't have multiple cameras for coverage. So they were in a scene where two characters are talking to one another, they would film character A's lines, break, move the camera, film character B's response, break, move the camera back, film camera or character A's next line, and so on and so forth, as opposed to, say, you know, like almost every other movie ever made in Hollywood, shooting all of the coverage for character A that, one day, and then character B the next, and then editing it later.
Sounds like a literal nightmare.
Well, that's just one of many, many things you'll learn in the documentary is, yeah,
it was
pretty nightmarish.
That's all well and good, but it kind of just backs up what I was saying about how there is not really a great idea from the get-go.
Well, to me, it makes me think that a lot of the script elements weren't super nailed down, you know, and that's something that kind of comes out of your earlier Showa era kaiju films, mm-hmm. in that the director was the script writer, was like the final arbiter. So they might have had like an outline, but a lot of that can change, especially when you are trying to translate like literally what you want an actor to do and say. Like, I'm not sure exactly how much of the script that they had at all times, but again, from the documentary, it seemed like some things changed a great deal from production. Some plots were kind of left behind. Some were added in as they continued on.
They didn't need more plots.
Yeah, no, there's
this whole subplot of this like shadow, like, government agency that knows about aliens, even though no one else does. And they're also like not keen on helping. And it just, they don't really give a good reason as to why they're not keen on helping. And the whole thing is just like, what's going on here?
Yeah, we don't get to see too much of the aliens themselves, but they are, you know, the inciting force that all the main characters are, you know, kind of knowingly and then or unknowingly and then knowingly working against in the movie. You know, talking about other films, this movie does kind of feel more like another Korean movie than it does Young Gary. It reminded me a great deal of, oh gosh, now my brain's going, the one that Space Monster Wong Mogwai, which had, you know, alien folks controlling a giant monster.
Look, if this movie had a kid climbing up and pissing in the kaiju, then we'd have ourselves a stew. But it is not Space Monster Wong Mogwai.
Well, this movie does have some salty language in one of the jetpack forces.
That entire sequence is
complaining, you know, compared to this guy, Godzilla's a pussy.
Yeah.
Every time that line comes up, I'm just like, why?
I was like, oh, this is awful. And also, as they're doing a scene where, like, that's not how jetpacks work. That's not how those guns would work. You all would be dead. And most of them become dead. And one of them just kamikazes into, like, the controlling device of the aliens that was kind of keeping Young Gary under their thrall. And
plot point from Space Monster Wong Mogwai as well.
It's just, it is funny when you are not like evaluating this movie by yourself. If you are drinking with pals, this movie would be a hoot and a holler, as would a lot of those kind of like Saturday afternoon movies that we've done in the past. But by itself in the somber hours of the day and the sober hours of the day, unfortunately, this movie does not have the charm as much as I feel like Patrick you find in it.
Yeah, I think that there is like a terminal velocity approaching terrible, not just bad, but terrible movie that like as you are sinking down into that black hole, you enjoy the trip. So even alone,
I understand enjoy what you're saying, but this is not going to affect like my actual ratings. Like I was like, yeah, I could enjoy this in a bad movie way, but there is like enjoying things in a bad movie way. That's like, oh, this is low key fun because. Like, because I'm a big proponent, because I grew up with MST3K, of was I entertained? And so, like, I remember going to see, what was that terrible video game adaptation that Uwe Boll did? Alone in the Dark.
Mm.
I saw the other buddy. We had been drinking and then gone to see it at the Westgate Mall and had an absolute ball. Like, I have the fondest memories of a god-awful movie. Like,
yeah.
Christian Slater and Tara Reid should be ashamed of themselves. But because of the conditions I watched it in, it's a really fun movie. How you watch that definitely helps. Can I see this being as a fun, terrible movie in that way? Yes. But I also was not entertained my initial time watching it for me.
I will say that you know, you mentioned it does seem like kind of a ripoff movie, but you can tell a lot of people were trying to give this their best. I think some of the actors, the American actors, realized it was not going to be successful at one point, so they started really hamming it up, you know.
I could certainly see that.
There's a lot of love, you know. You just got to look at the technical aspects that they were working with. You know, you mentioned we've seen pictures of the suits that they made for the movie, which I think would have looked great.
They would have looked great. And honestly, even if the suits had been that good, I would probably be more forgiving a little bit towards this movie.
So they did technically use the suits and they scanned them to make the 3D models, which, you know, maybe that's something that they normally do in these kind of films that will mix miniatures and Suimation and 3D. But they ultimately decided, you know, that they were going to do the vast majority of the effects in 3D. But yeah, they built a ton of miniatures. They built the giant bone sets, which, you know, looked okay for,
yeah,
for the movie.
Well,
I feel like the
folks they were Party City fine.
The folks working behind the scenes, I think, were doing a very good job. I think the director, through whatever, you know, problems persisted on set through his megalomania, which was kind of reported by some of the actors, maybe stemming from the fact that he felt a little, you know, like he had to kind of keep a tight rein on the ship because he didn't speak English like at all. So to some of his decision making, and maybe because he didn't have that, you know, good of a relationship with the actors or some of the other people on set, you know, no one told him no, it seemed like, for just about anything that they did, from dialogue to what have you. And it reminded me a lot of Troll 2, where you hear about the directors of that movie saying, no, this is how you say the line. And all the American actors were there like, well, that doesn't really make sense, you know?
Right.
But yeah, that seems like the same thing is happening here.
I mean, I could certainly see that. And it's just, I think to get to a point where I would enjoy this movie, it asks a lot of me. Like, because watching this movie by itself is one thing, and then watching the 2-hour documentary that exists, and then probably watching it again with friends, like that's a lot to invest to get enjoyment out of 1999's Young Gary.
Not me. I enjoyed it a great deal. Let's get to our rating, Miles. This movie on Rotten Tomatoes has a 12% audience score, on IMDb a 2.7 out of 10. And it actually has a very good score on Letterboxd, 2.4 out of 5 stars on Letterboxd. So, you know, right there in the middle. And for personal enjoyment, I do think this is just a blast of good bad. It is hilarious how the annals of ineptitude that it goes into, like, this at the time, like I said, the most expensive Korean film ever made. The amount of terrible line readings in this movie, like I said, I think the actors are doing it on purpose at one point in the film because it just gets so over the top. This is the Yeti of the 20th century.
Yeah, I knew that's where you were coming season. From.
But it's also, I feel like this is like the actual Troll 2 of bad kaiju movies. It is bad to where you can enjoy it multiple times. So I think this is excellent entertainment. It's cheesy. It's dumb. It also does have fun with itself at the very least, kind of towards the end when I think the movie was coming off the rails. So I think pretty high for this kind of movie and giving it a 7 out of 10 for personal enjoyment. It's very good. It's very good bad. What about you, Miles?
I, on the other hand, side with IMDb. I think anything that you can garner from this movie is completely unintentional. And which, yeah, whether or not it's intended is a whole other conversation, but I certainly don't give it props because, like, oh, the actors hammed it up on purpose. Well, that they made the movie worse. I find the whole thing kind of just, frankly, a bore to watch. Like, yes, there are some, like, on its own, like, legitimately funny scenes because they're just so silly and cartoonish and like, oh, I can't believe you actually tried to do that. But like I said, under certain circumstances, yeah, I can enjoy that, but it's not the level of bad good that I really look for. And so frankly, I I abhorred my time with this movie. So my personal enjoyment was a 3.
Oh my, called it there. What about your technical?
You aspect? Called it.
Yeah, I wrote down 3? In the notes. It sounded like where you're going. What about the technical aspect of the film?
I think the problem with the technical aspects of this movie is really the victim of miscommunication, because do you have some good designs? Yes. Mm-hmm. Do you potentially have an interesting idea? Debatable. And then do you have a good cast? No. But mixing all those things together, you know, you can always get, you know, varying levels of entertaining. And the problem for me with this movie is because you clearly have a director who is not engaging in the people around him and therefore kind of ignoring the script. And the script, how it's being delivered for it's, I don't want to say intended, but for the language that they're making the film in.
Mm-hmm.
And like you brought up Troll 2 as a perfect example. Like it's almost as if the movie's being made against itself. And so for those reasons, like, I mean, the special effects are not great. I mean, they're Zarkor levels. They're
better than when they came out in theaters, supposedly. Originally.
Yeah, that's not helping.
The upgraded version.
I'm sticking with my 3, bud. absolutely poor. I mean, and like every aspect of it is mm-hmm. to me is very poor. And it's like he even hearing the reasons behind it just solidifies why I feel so strongly about giving this a low rating.
Yeah, I understand. I have to give a lot more props, I think, to everyone on board for this, because it's like I can't imagine myself going to Korea and trying to make a movie in Korean, you know, with the actors and like having to give all my directions through like a assistant director or something along those lines. So in that respect, I feel like they achieved something that was impossible from the get-go. And as you go through the movie, like I said, it's really hard to believe that some of the line readings are not intentionally going kind of like in the not the worst possible direction, but the most insane direction that they could. And that's where a lot of the movie's charm kind of comes from. So it's hard to ding like the actors in the movie. But yeah, the effects and costumes do leave a lot to be desired. I really just wish we had gotten a full on kind of lean into the goofiness and have those rubber suits, those suitimations on screen. But yeah, it's still not good. I'm giving it a 5 out of 10 for the technical. And the same thing for kind of its importance as a kaiju movie. I feel like we've definitely seen some worse, some less important films in the 90s, but this one I'm putting right there in the middle again, because I feel like this is a huge swing for Korea. It is, you know, a huge swing for this director. And honestly, it is not that bad. And it's amazing that they were able to, you know, bring something out of this level and put it up around 1998's Godzilla. But trying to make a movie to compete with that film that has like 20 times the budget or something crazy like that, you know, it seemed like it was setting itself up for a failure. You have to be, you know, work pretty hard to have a less of a cultural impact than the original 1967 Yongiri, which, you know, for the most part has become famous for being a big Godzilla knockoff in more ways than one. But yeah, I think this movie at the very least kind of sets itself apart from 1998's TriStar. In that movie was bad in like a whole different way than this movie was bad. So yeah, I'm giving a 5 out of 10 there. What about you, Miles? Should I just write 3? Again?
So, I mean, we have differing opinions of Godzilla 1998, but mm-hmm. I do agree. This movie is not that bad. It's terrible. And I will give it this, and I will be kinder to it for this. Does it attempt to fully be a fully realized kaiju film? Does it use ideas mm-hmm. from kaiju films past and yeah. try to implement it on screen? Absolutely, it does. Is it a big swing? Yes. However, It's a big swing and a miss. And it has to be stressed, this movie is a miss. Like, yes, you can appreciate a movie for having a big swing. And that's perfectly fine. I have had my fair share of movies that I got a bat for simply on the basis of, oh, yeah, it's a big swing. So, I mean, I can't fault you for that. But for me, I find this movie, you know, it's been largely kind of forgotten at time. I feel like, you know, as kaiju movies are getting more and more attention, people will probably come back to this. It's on Tubi right now, the home of Misfit Toys. Like, there's so many random movies that you're like, whoa, that's streaming?
Yeah.
And like, it's not on there now, but I think like 2 years ago, I found the Guyver 2 Dark Hero on Tubi and I was in heaven. So I'm going to give it a 4 because you're right. It is a big swing and it does, you know, it does follow the kaiju trope. So it is a kaiju film. You can't deny that. But I mean, everything else that makes this poopy stew is still a poopy stew. And I can't give it any more credit than that.
Miles, you are insane. So you're giving Craw, the sea monster, like a full point higher than this movie, just FYI.
Absolutely. Because everything that you said about this movie in terms of entertaining fun, I apply to Craw. Let's not be crazy. I didn't give Craw a crazy high score.
No, but you gave it
a 5. Like,
did you, or is it a,
yeah, it got a straight 5 from both of us.
A high 4, and both of ours rounded up to a 5, which was pretty generous. But I as much fun as we had with that being a bad movie, this one was like a bad movie that they spent a ton more money on, you know, which is kind of fun in its own right. So that is going to bring my final score to a 6 and yours to a 3. It's one of the larger disparities, I think, between our scores in a while.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the largest, but it's been a while since we've differed so much.
But that's not going to be enough to save it. This does go into contention for one of the worst films of this decade. So we're going to round it down to a 4 out of 10 for the podcast. Yeah, I didn't have like high hopes of it getting much higher than a 5. But yeah, my personal enjoyment.
I kind of
want to watch this movie again, like as soon as I can. I almost watched it twice just for this, because like I said, I started watching that documentary and I was just like, how is there so much footage as
time passed? I was like, I probably should watch Young Gary again just to refresh it. And then I was like, what? No. As soon as I was about to press pause, I was like, wait, I didn't like this movie at all. Why am I doing this? to refresh anecdotes, remember certain lines? No, absolutely not. No. It's
committed to memory, Miles. We'll go back and we'll rewatch this.
I'm flushing it down my brain's toilet as soon as we finish recording.
Your brain toilet. Yes, of course. But where can folks find us if they want to chat about Young Gary with 2 G's?
Oh, if you want to talk about a Young Gary 2 G's, you can't. We can't be found on the internet. It's weird. It's
going down the brain toilet.
Yeah. No, if you want to reach out to us, you can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can tweet to us, post to us on Twitter /X/ whatever Elon's calling it this week, at Kaiju versus History. You can visit our website, kaijuversushistory.com. You can rate and review our show, comment, share with your friends, let us know what you think. Check out our Letterboxd account, Kaiju vs. History, to see our reviews and watch our list of films. And join the Cosmic Crit Discord. There is a Kaiju vs. History channel that we post in pretty regularly, mostly to remind us what cool knickknacks are coming out.
Yeah. This year.
Oh, you're feasting. You got them Godzilla hats.
Oh, yeah. I forgot I bought those. This year, it's been all, you know, lead up into Godzilla, Kong, New World Order, whatever it's called.
New Empire.
New Empire, which I think by the time this movie or this episode comes out, that movie's probably out by now. We might be seeing it right now as we talk.
I might be in the theater right now. So what are we doing next week, Patrick? We've got to be finishing up the 90s.
Oh, I think it comes out like the week after this episode comes out. Yeah, so thank you, Miles. Thank you, listeners. We are going to catch you next time when we have to say both a hello and a goodbye with the first in a brand new series of Big G Kaiju films, but also the last film on our show to come out in the 1990s. So last Kaiju film for this season of Kaiju vs. History. So tune in next time indeed for the end of season 5 of the podcast and for History vs. Godzilla 2000.